This Monday, roughly 40 progressive prosecutors across the country signed a pledge to visit prisons, jails, and juvenile detention centers, and committed to have their staffs make the visits as well. In large part, the initiative is attempting to close a major empathy gap. Advocates say prosecutors should see and visit the facilities in which the people they incarcerate are held. Closing that empathy gap was also one of the goals of last month's Justice Votes 2020 presidential town hall. The attendees of the town hall were formerly incarcerated people, their family members, and others who have been directly affected by our criminal justice system. But only three of the Democratic candidates actually showed up to the event: Senators Cory Booker and Kamala Harris, and billionaire Tom Steyer.
Tens of thousands of stories of personal destruction that have been caused at the hands of a criminal justice system that is patently biased, patently racist, patently attacking the most vulnerable people in our country.
And so you can't do that 30,000 foot direct what goes on the ground. You have to start on the ground with the people most involved, because otherwise you're not going to get all the information and nuance you need to have fair policy.
I have visited many prisons. I know what has been going on in the system, which is why way back when, you know, I made a very conscious decision to become a prosecutor, knowing how broken and how unjust the criminal justice system of America can be.
Presidential candidate Julian Castro also met with incarcerated individuals at a jail in Washington, D.C. last month.
Julian,
but while some candidates are focusing on criminal justice in their campaigns, a true overhaul of the system will also require the cooperation of prosecutors, who play a key role in shaping the charges brought against defendants and the sentences that are ultimately handed down. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we start today on The Takeaway. With us now is Justin Juvenal, a reporter for The Washington Post covering criminal justice issues, and Miriam Krinsky, the executive director at Fair and Just Prosecution, the group leading this initiative. Justin, Miriam, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us on.
Miriam, you are a former U.S. attorney. What was your own record visiting prisons?
So I really didn't avail myself of the opportunity and you know, found myself in the 80s and 90s caught in that mindset that didn't understand that humanity and that human face and the consequences of what we were doing. And it was only years later, when I spent 5 years working on an investigation of conditions in prisons and jails and spent quite a bit of time inside those prison walls, that I started to come to understand the value and the need and really the obligation of prosecutors to make that kind of journey themselves and to give a face to the consequences of the weighty decisions they make.
Miriam, you know, people who sign up for this initiative are mainly progressive prosecutors. And a lot of what we're talking about here is empathy or lack thereof for this population. Do you think that less progressive prosecutors, more conservative prosecutors, people who are perhaps a little more punitive, might also be interested in agreeing to visit prisons and jails?
I think so. And I think that we're really at the cusp of a new normal in the field of prosecution, where the views of communities that they've simply had enough with the tough on crime and failed practices of the past is starting to take hold, and where we are seeing more prosecutors around the country from parts large and small, from coast to coast, and from both sides of the political divide, rally around these sorts of principles and the notion that they have to take responsibility for the justice system and for the human consequences of the decisions that they make.
Justin, you've been covering this issue, and I'm wondering, we said there are about 40 prosecutors across the country who signed on to this initiative, but who are some of the standouts for you in terms of the wave of prosecutors who are leading this charge?
Well, one gentleman who's gotten a lot of attention recently is Chesa Boudin in San Francisco. He was just elected as the prosecutor there. Wesley Bell is the St. Louis County prosecutor. He gained traction and got elected in the wake of the shooting out there of Michael Brown. There's the Attorney General of Vermont. As Miriam Krinsky says, there's a cross-section of prosecutors from across the country, from all regions, and You have major city prosecutors, and you also have some small town prosecutors as well.
We're seeing, Justin, across the country, prosecutors who want to change the status quo, who we're labeling here at least as more progressive. Are they really able to implement their agendas, or are they facing resistance?
Well, they're able to implement their agendas in some cases, but they're also facing resistance. We've seen particularly police unions push back against some of these prosecutors. The race I just mentioned in San Francisco saw the police union out there dump hundreds of thousands of dollars into the campaign to try to defeat Chesa Boudin. They were ultimately unsuccessful, but they're is increasingly strident and strong pushback against these prosecutors and their policies. A lot of police and more conservative folks feel that their policies will increase crime and make communities less safe.
Justin, 2020 presidential candidate Kamala Harris, who herself is a former prosecutor, has come under fire for that record, and as attorney general in California. I want to play a little bit about what she had to say about why she chose to be a prosecutor over being a defense attorney during the presidential debate in October.
I made a decision to become a prosecutor for two reasons. One, I've always wanted to protect people and keep them safe. And second, I was born knowing about how this criminal justice system in America has worked in a way that has been informed by racial bias. And I could tell you extensively about the experiences I and my family members have personally had. But I made a decision that if I was going to have the ability to reform the system, I would try to do it from the inside.
Now, of course, Justin, Kamala Harris has come under criticism for her role as a prosecutor from more progressive voters of color in particular. Does what she say there mirror a lot of what progressive prosecutors today are saying, that they want to try and change things from the inside?
Yeah, that's actually sort of the philosophy of it. In fact, a lot of the people that you see coming forward to run as progressive prosecutors are former public defenders, former civil rights attorneys, who have decided to forego that line of work and actually redirect their energy towards, winning these elections and trying to change the system from the inside. I mean, the idea is that the prosecutor is one of the most powerful actors in the criminal justice system. They have great latitude on sentencing, on what charges to pursue, on whether to seek bail or do away with bail. So the idea is that they can have a great influence over the criminal justice system and a direct influence by taking these offices and implementing more progressive policies.
Miriam, for prosecutors who make a point of visiting prisons and jails before this initiative took off, or even, now that this initiative is being signed off on, what are the tangible changes that you're looking to see in terms of how they do their work? I mean, I guess, a big part of the question is this just a photo op to say we did it and we went in, behind the gates and we've seen what happened? Or is there really anything that prosecutors can get out of this that will change the way that they operate?
I think there's a huge amount that they can get from it. And I think, as you described it at the outset, the notion of that empathy gap really acknowledges that there's no substitute for the human face and the seeing firsthand the consequences of that decision to charge or not to charge, to seek a mandatory minimum, to put a young person into the adult system, really being able to have that human contact. And also, it's a manifestation, I think, these visits, of a revisioning of their role. Taking on and owning the responsibility for the conditions inside the places where they send people, starting to see the treatment that goes on for those who are struggling with substance use issues or have medical problems, understanding the life stories of individuals who have ended up making big mistakes but shouldn't be defined forever by that worst mistake that they've made. And also starting to own the notion that these are individuals who are coming back to our community. And there's more that we have to be doing to prepare them for reentry and to not put them on the never-ending cycle in and out of the justice system that too many of them find themselves on. So I think that there are a huge number of ways in which these visits can be impactful and start as well to break down the longstanding culture in prosecutors' offices that have led to some of the patterns that we've seen and to the mass incarceration that so many of these new leaders seek to break down.
In terms of some of those patterns, I mean, are you expecting perhaps to get sentencing reform out of this, where the idea is, you know, we can't incarcerate somebody for 20 years in a cell that size? Are you looking to hope that prosecutors might advocate perhaps for more programming and rehabilitation services behind prison gates?
All of the above. And we've seen examples of that. We've seen Stephanie Morales in Virginia start to advocate and create reentry programming based on visits she's conducted. We've seen Dan Satterberg in Seattle advocate and take on the issue of needing to look for mechanisms for reviewing past decades-long sentences based on what he saw and his recognition and understanding that individuals don't have to be thrown away, that past choices that were made are not the choices for sentences we would make today. And by virtue of that, there's a responsibility for prosecutors to go back and reopen those doors and return people to the community if they no longer need to be sent to these facilities and kept there for decades on end.
Justin, one of the things that's emerging in this conversation is also the idea that some of these initiatives are bipartisan, at least in theory. Are you seeing a shift in the way politicians talk about sentencing, mass incarceration? I mean, we know President Trump signed the Bipartisan First Step Act into law late last year.
Yeah, there's actually been a real shift in the last several years. It's been a bipartisan shift. You've seen, Republicans come on board with some criminal justice reform, and they're making arguments for criminal justice reform from a conservative perspective. The cost of incarcerating people and incarcerating people in the numbers that we do in the United States has skyrocketed and blown budgets. So you see a lot of Republicans making arguments that we need to reduce the prison population as a means of streamlining government budgets. So, the First Step Act and other reforms that we've seen in recent years would not have come about if there wasn't movement on both sides of the aisle.
Justin Juvenal is a reporter for The Washington Post who covers criminal justice issues. And Miriam Krinsky is the executive director at Fair and Just Prosecution. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.